Welcome to Suspiria.
Heads up, I don't think there's going to be any songs this week. Steph made a very inappropriate suggestion for this case. She didn't know specifics, but I mean, I think that anything is just too sad for us to sing at this point. I don't know.
In my defense, I just made an assumption. Yeah, do you want
to tell them what happened, Steph?
There's a singer in Brazil called Angélica, which is the name of our victim. And she has a very famous song from like the late 80s called Vou de Taxi, which means like she takes the cab somewhere. And it's like a very romantic song. So I started singing it and Carol informed me that it's not appropriate for our case. So I apologize.
Yeah, because the victim was dumped via. No. She was put in a taxi, basically, before she was dumped. And, yeah, not after I saying that, you know, this girl's on fire on a fire episode. Yeah, that was something that I'm never going to forgive myself for. But, yeah, so I'm saving stuff from those mistakes. Yeah.
Exactly. I did not know that, so it never happened.
Okay. Still going to be at the description, the song to set the mood, because we mentioned it, and that's the rules. Taxi. So, yeah, hello.
Yeah. Welcome to Suspiria, a true crime podcast.
I am Carol.
And I am Stephanie.
Yeah. And, yeah, I don't know how to even, like, start this. It's one of those really bad cases. So I guess we should start with a trigger warning for people that have any kind of ounce of empathy in this earth. They're listening to this. That it's not an easy one. We're going to always like warn you before we get into bad descriptions. So you can like skip forward. But yeah, this is a child that was murdered pretty gruesomely. So yeah, just beware of that. Don't think that there's a happy ending like some of our recent cases. So,
yeah, unfortunately. Yeah.
We based today's episode on articles from Officer.com, CBS 2 News, CNN, The New York Times, New York Post, The New York Daily News, Daily Mail, and Wikipedia for names, dates, and such. Okay, so let's rip the Band-Aid. So it's July 23rd, 1991, when a blue igloo cooler was found on the Henry Hudson Parkway and Dyckman Street in New York. Why are you guys covering something from New York? Well, you're going to find out. So the cooler was about 50 feet away from the highway in the woods, and it was found after a couple workers decided to investigate the origin of the bad smell they had been smelling for the past couple days. That on itself, it's terrifying. Yeah, exactly. Terrifying. It's like Elisa Lam, that they noticed that the water's weird and they just like forget about it for like a couple of days and then investigate and something really bad. Can you imagine being smelling that smell for like days and don't do anything?
Elisa Lam is literally the reason why I have a shower filter, because some weird ass stuff was coming out of my shower and I was like,
not today.
I'm not going to find this body.
Yeah. So they opened the cooler. And they call the police immediately, obviously, because inside of the cooler, covered by a green piece of cloth and amongst an open soda cans and water, was the body of a little girl inside a trash bag, decomposed beyond recognition. So she had been put in a fetal position with her knees bound to her neck with a Venetian rope. So like, you know, like blinds rope.
Yeah.
Her long dark hair was still in a ponytail, and it was all being held by like a yellow barrette, her hair. So, yeah, it was determined that she was between 3 and 5 years old, of Hispanic or Asian ancestry. She had been severely malnourished and weighed only 28 pounds. They were able to see that she had been a victim of sexual abuse and probably died at around the 18th, 5 days before she was found. So a little bit after, not after, but like, you know, after the fact, one of the investigators said that when they found out like how malnourished she was, he says that, like, it sucks to say, put it this way, but she's better off dead because she would have been dead in like 6 months because she was barely being fed, kind of thing. So yeah, it's a tough life, you know.
Yeah.
So no one was able to identify her, or no one even came forward to claim her body. So she was named Baby Hope. The 34th Precinct of New York investigated the death of Baby Hope for 2 years. They did multiple sketches of what Baby was supposed to look like, what she would have looked like while in life, and even sent her skull to Toronto so experts draw the best portrait as possible to aid on identification purposes. So that one, they have like several ones, and they kind of look like different people. If you see like all the sketches that they made, and all of them, she has like really sunken in cheeks and stuff. She has like different like hairstyles on each one of them. But one thing that all of them have is like the teeth. Like she has like not prominent teeth, but like distinct teeth, you know. And the one that they did in Toronto, it looks like perfect. It looks like a little girl. You know what I mean? Like it's perfect. And it's the one that she's kind of like, she's not looking like straightforward. She's kind of looking sideways. So that one's, I think, the first picture that we're going to post. Because also, there's no pictures of her, like even after she was identified, spoilers. There's no pictures of what she actually looked like. But there's a picture of her sister that looks exactly like that. That looks exactly like that drawing. So that was fascinating, like how accurate that portrait probably is. So at that time, the time that they did the sketches and everything, there was barely any leads for the case. A witness had seen a Hispanic man and a woman carrying a cooler around the location that the cooler that we're talking about that had the baby inside was found. Also, a few months after Baby Hope died, a child pornography bust was done, and they found in New Jersey pictures of a girl that would fit Baby Hope's description. So they for a little bit thought it was her. Unfortunately, the case went cold. Nothing found in or around the cooler provided any insight as to who Baby Hope was or who might have killed her. So she was buried in 1993 at the St. Raymond Cemetery in a donated casket and a little white dress. There's this picture of like the dress that she was buried in, and there's like a cop right next to it, and he's like crying, like bawling his eyes out. And the cops that were at the funeral, they say that no one was dry-eyed, that everyone was just bawling. It was really hard. So one of the investigators gave a eulogy, and the religious service held before the burial was a full house with some 500 people in attendance. Her gravestone at the time was marked as Baby Hope, and underneath that there was a small plaque with a 1-800 number to call in case anyone had any info. And underneath that, that is usually like covered by weeds and stuff, and the gifts that they would place at the gravesite. But the police wrote down like "because we care" on it.
Oh
yeah. So yeah, this is basically everything that we had on this case for like 20 years.
Yeah, so her body was exhumed twice, once in 2006 and then in 2011 to collect DNA samples from the bones. The case was officially reopened in 2013 with a mass effort to collect tips from the public. Posters were placed all around New York City with her picture, together with an offer of $12,000 as a reward for information.
Which is just, that's just genius, you know what I mean?
What?
Just doing that, like, reopening an investigation like that and just putting her picture everywhere. Because you guess people, like, talking about it,
right? Exactly, and people must have forgotten about it because it's been 20 years.
They describe it as, 22. Like, a media blitz. Like, every news station was covering it again. So that's, I mean, they use this case as, like, a, you know, model of what good police work.
So finally, something good happened. An anonymous woman tells the police that she overheard a conversation at her laundromat 2 years prior when a mom was talking about her daughter who had been missing for 22 years, which is just horrifying. Mm-hmm. They identified the woman as Margarita Castillo, and DNA proves that baby Hope is her missing daughter. And as soon as the identification was made, her real name was placed on her gravestone, Angelica Castillo.
Yeah.
So what happened to Angelica? Well, while she was alive, Angelica was a chatty 4-year-old who liked to ask questions and had a very strong personality. Sounds like most of the 4-year-olds that I know.
Yeah.
Margarita had been in an abusive relationship with Genaro Ramirez, Angelica's dad, for years. They had 3 kids together, and one day, out of the blue, he took the kids and went back to Mexico. That is what Margarita thought. In reality, he left Angelica in Astoria, Queens, with cousin Balvina Juarez Ramirez, and then he went to Mexico. So, trigger warning, guys.
Yeah.
Is it Balvina or Belvina? Did I mispronounce it?
I think it's Belvina.
Okay, I'm sorry. It's Belvina.
Yeah.
No, so, Belvina had a brother, Conrado Juarez, who would sometimes stay over because her house was closer to his workplace than his apartment in the Bronx. Him and Belvina would barely feed Angelica. They would bind her to a table or chair when she was being too difficult, which, to be honest, if you've ever babysat in your life, mm-hmm. there's no 4-year-old that is not difficult.
Mm-hmm. But still, to tie a kid to a chair, it's not
human. Yeah.
So just a comma here, but they said, I mean, Conrado would say that he, like, it was like a difficult position because they suddenly had like these kids that they didn't want, you know? So yeah, it was like her and her sister, and they had to like take care of them, which is a situation that I don't see how it makes any sense in my head, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I see that they might have had like a lot of resentment and stuff towards the kids. So
I mean, but at the same time, you could just like report it to the state. Yeah, it's not going to be a much better life for them, but like, you're in no way, even if you're an actual parent, you're in no way obligated to like stay with your kids if you don't think you can take care of them properly.
Yeah, they could just give it back to the mom, you know, like it's your brother, like you left, like whatever, you know what I mean? Just give it back. Like the guy's in Mexico, like who cares? Yeah.
So he raped her in the bed of a spare bedroom, and he would later say that he didn't mean to kill her, but because she was crying and screaming during the rape, he smothered her with a pillow. Like, I'm not even gonna comment on this. He told Belvina about what he had done right away, and she came up with a plan to hide the body. So you can already tell, like, the character of this person. Mm-hmm. They put her in a cooler and took a cab to Manhattan to dump it.
Yeah.
So let that sink in.
Ugh. So Margarita at this point still believes that Angelica is in Mexico with her dad and sister. She didn't know that she was missing or that she had been found dead even. Like, I believe that if she had seen the sketch of her daughter, she would have
like it would have clicked for her,
but I don't know if they did like as much of it as a big media thing back in when this case was developing, but yeah, she didn't know. So it's important to point out here that Margarita has been very criticized because she was, even by the police, they say that they don't sympathize with her loss at all because she didn't go to the police and she didn't report. It was just completely like, you know, it seems like she was indifferent to the loss. However, it doesn't seem to me that that was the case. It's because, I mean, I think after a little bit of time, she noticed that she was missing, you know what I mean? And they looked for, they were looking for Angelica. It's not like they were not looking, you know, she wasn't indifferent. Yeah, she couldn't do shit, but she wasn't indifferent. She couldn't do shit because, I mean, in her own words, because one, she didn't speak English, so she was afraid that the police wouldn't take her seriously or that anyone would be able to, like, that no one was going to be able to identify. And I mean, maybe this is my theory too. She was afraid that she was going to be to sign something, or she's not going to have like an interpret, and she's going to be like a culprit for something she didn't do, which is hard, you know. So she didn't go to the police. And second reason is that she and her family were undocumented immigrants. So she was afraid that if she went to the authorities, she would be deported immediately.
And that's like a real, like, it's a real thing. I personally know someone who in 2007, when I was in middle school, I'm not going to say how old I was in 2007. I was between 10 and 14, okay? Okay. I was in
every middle school. Every episode we get closer to your age, Steph.
Yeah. So when I was in middle school in 2007, I lived with my grandma. And all of a sudden, this girl showed up at school and she was pregnant. Mm. And she was our age. So we were like, who the fuck is this girl? I come to find out that this girl previously, mind you, I was living with my grandma in Brazil. So this girl previously lived in the U.S. She actually lived in my quote-unquote hometown here in Massachusetts. Oh, wow. And she was dating this older guy. She was 13. Mm-hmm. She was dating this older guy.
Yeah.
And she got pregnant, and he was American. And her dad was like, no, because, you know, small town people, your daughter gets pregnant. Okay, you're going to marry my daughter. You got her pregnant. That's just a tradition in Brazil, especially small towns. So her dad went up to his family and he was like, listen, your son is 17. He's about to turn 18. You guys need to do something about this. My daughter's 13, like, and she's pregnant. And they were like, oh, well, you can have her get an abortion. Oh. And as most of you Latinos know, an abortion for Latinos is like a big no-no. And her dad was like, no, she's not getting an abortion.
Just pause. Just to make clear, we accept a pro-life position. No. We accept a pro-choice position in this podcast. We made that clear, I think, from like the first episode. But
yeah,
pro-choice, you know, they're choosing not to. So
yeah.
Yeah, anyway.
Yeah, so her dad was like, no, she's not getting an abortion. Like, you guys are going to do something about this. And his mom, in turn, said, well, you can either get the fuck off my lawn or I can call immigration and have all of you deported.
And so she did.
So, no, she didn't call immigration. Oh, okay. Her dad voluntarily bought her a ticket and, like, was like, okay, go live with your grandma. But, like, it's just one of these things because as most people don't realize this, but you don't just call immigration. You're not like, hello, ICE, so my neighbor, like, that's not how it works. Well, now in the Trump era is a little more like that because they have the little stupid-ass form that you can fill out and report people on the USCIS website now. But back in 2006, that's not how it was at all.
No, back a few years ago, it wasn't like that. Things are changing really fast.
And, like, it's not, like, I don't get people because, like, it's not like the USCIS doesn't know where the undocumented immigrants are. Yeah. Immigrants are. They know where they are. They just don't have a reason to go get them. So it's just, like, I was sorry to make this about myself in a way, but I just wanted to showcase an example of how real this is. And this was 15 years after the after Angelica's murder.
And
you would think that things would evolve, but no.
Yeah, it's a very real thing, like, even for documented immigrants. Like, I personally have never been in the U.S. undocumented, but like, the fear of deportation is just something that is just, like, I don't know how to explain it. It's
I, like, have been.
Yeah. No, sorry.
But I didn't know that I was undocumented. So, like, it didn't click with me. And then I wasn't anymore, so.
Yeah. And, like, this kind of fear thing, like, sometimes some actions that would make sense for you if you don't have, if you've never, like, experienced that, like, it doesn't make sense. You know what I mean? Like, why would she not go to the police? You know? Like, she's not doing it, but it's, you know, it's like, you either want to believe that your child was horribly murdered or that she's okay in Mexico with her dad. You know, I would rather not risk everything and believe that she's all right, you know, and I'll hear from her, right? And yeah, so I've seen her being really, really criticized and like, yeah, this girl, she's equally as culprit because she didn't report, but it's, you know, people have their reason. Yeah, it's different. Like, it's
not. Most people will never know what it's like being an immigrant. Mm-hmm. Most Americans will never know because, mm-hmm. I'll tell you, like, 99% of the Americans that I know think that this is the most perfect country ever and they don't need to go anywhere else, which I'm fine, mm-hmm. with that. If that's, yeah. your opinion, more power to you. And let alone being an undocumented immigrant. Mm-hmm. Like, I cannot see an American becoming undocumented. So it's hard for, like, us here to understand things, mm-hmm. that we... If you cannot put yourself in people's shoes, you just don't get it. You know, it doesn't, yeah. make sense to you.
Yeah. It's... I don't know. I sympathize with Margarita. Like, there's some open ends in the story that I think that pertain to her, and that if she was more vocal to the press, like, explain the whole situation a little better, we're gonna get into it, like, by the end of this episode. I think that definitely there's open ends and things that I just can't explain from this case.
Yeah.
And it's definitely information that is not, it's missing from the public, you know, the public knowledge of this case, and we're gonna discuss it a little bit. But I sympathize with her. I don't think that she was completely like, you know, oh, she is not looking for her daughter and she's a horrible person. She was probably guilty too. You know, that's not the position at least I will take, because it's...
Yeah. You know. And just one last note on, mm-hmm. the whole undocumented, mm-hmm. thing. When most people, well, again, when I say most people, I don't mean most people who... at least try to educate themselves in immigration. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about the general public who, yeah. thinks you can just go in line and be like, okay, where's my green card? Oh, thank you. Thank,
yeah,
you
so just much. Get a green, just become a citizen. It's like, oh yeah, I can just knock, exactly. on the citizenship office in my country and be like, hello, I want to move to America. And then he goes,
all right. American passport?
Yeah.
It's exactly. But like, most people have this vision of undocumented immigrants where it's like, oh, these brown people crossing our borders and jumping over the fence. And, like, most of the undocumented people are people who fly in, mm-hmm. with a tourist visa. And they're just like, okay, I'm in. Goodbye. And never leave. So, yeah. like, just wanted to, like, demystify this. Because, mm-hmm. anyway.
Yeah, okay. With Margarita's, like, the whole family. At least Margarita. She came to the West through San Diego, so I think it was swimming or boat kind of thing, in the mid-80s. So it wasn't like overstaying visa, but I mean, I think that, I don't know, it's...
I did a project recently on immigration, mm-hmm. and I was like analyzing the trends in undocumented immigration, mm-hmm. and by... So what... I don't want to get too political.
That's fine.
But basically, what happened is... The U.S. went into Mexico, and they were like, in the 60s, they're like, okay, who wants to come work in the U.S.? Because, mm-hmm. they needed farm workers. Mm-hmm. And then they were like, okay, no more farm workers, blah, 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 goodbye. But then, like, it had already, like, opened that opportunity, and, mm-hmm. people had already, like, seen that as a thing. So, like, a network of smuggling people, mm-hmm. was established, like, back in the 70s. And it has been going on for, yeah. the past 40 years. So, like, if you're starving and you know, if you, mm-hmm. go to the consulate, they're definitely not going to give you a visa because, one, you're brown and, two, you're poor.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have another
People
choice.
Don't understand the copious amounts of money that it takes
to get a visa.
Exactly. So, it's... Can I put this out there? I think it's a little bit of a conspiracy theory, but I don't think it's too much of a stretch. I think those policies are created to keep the brownness of the brown out of the U.S.
Yep. Yep. And exactly. Yeah.
So it's like only like the, I'm talking about the elites.
Are in able Latin to American go. Countries. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. So yeah, it's a load of bullshit, but
it's,
yeah, I've been through that process really recently, so I'm not gonna talk too much shit about it because I got it, but like, you know, I don't know, I still have a bad taste in my mouth because of it. Like, it's not
no, and it's so much so that I know several Brazilian people who like literally dug through the whole family tree until they found a European ancestor, ancestor, because if you have a red passport, you can just be like, oh, let me in. Oh, hello, yeah. America. Well, Trump is changing that now, but
yeah, and they're stopping the whole Italian passport thing. Like, you can only get it now if you want to actually live in Italy.
Yep. So, no, but like, I know so many Brazilians in Massachusetts that have an Italian, Portuguese, or Spanish passport, and they only got it because they knew that they would not be given a visa.
Yeah.
They would not, like, these are like working class people that would never get a visa. Mm-hmm. The only reason why they are here today is because their passport is red and it does not say Mercosur. Mm-hmm. That's the only reason. So.
Yeah. I mean, I'm kind of bitter because I couldn't get any kind of those citizenships because my family is an immigrant family from about 17 European countries. And all of them, like, came to Brazil in, like, the 1800s. And that's too late to get it. Like,
now, see?
Yeah. So, it's, like, grandpa is Italian, then you get it. But, like, mine's, like, the grandfathers of my grandmother. You know what I mean? Like, it's too much, too far behind. So, yeah. Yeah, I have a Portuguese last name and a Spanish last name. And I know all my last names, but none of them give me anything.
Fucking my closest ancestor from Europe moved to Brazil in the 1900s, but one, this person, I'm not gonna say which country they're from, this person had reasons to hide what where they were from. Shut up, Kara.
Oh, I'm laughing because I'm same place here.
This person had reasons to hide where they were from, and in this person's country you only get citizenship if it's through your, like, if it's through a male, and they are related to one of my grandmothers.
Mm-hmm.
So I would never get it because she's a female. So she cannot pass down shit anybody.
Same. Sucks.
Yeah.
Anyway. Oh my God.
Immigration rant over.
No, we never, like, derailed this much in, like, the season, I think.
I get really heated about immigration. I'm sorry.
Me too. I mean, I think that's a good topic. I mean, I kind of chose this case so we can talk about immigration a little bit too, you know, because, okay, last derailment, all right? People ignore, like, the kind of situations that you get put in because of your status and because you're an immigrant. Mm-hmm. And there's a few things that would not happen to U.S. citizens that would happen to immigrants, and especially undocumented immigrants. And this is a situation that would not have happened because, you know, if, I mean, Angelica was a U.S. citizen, but Margarita wasn't. So, so it's, like, something that is completely avoidable. If there's no, like, you know, I don't know, it sucks that she was put into that position. And that she couldn't report her daughter missing, like, come on, you know?
Yeah, and not only that, but I definitely feel like people of color in general are considered the less dead. Mm-hmm. Shout out to Amber's podcast,
The Last Dead. Shout out to The Last Dead podcast with Amber and Jesse.
Yeah, like, they are considered the less dead. So it doesn't matter that she's a U.S. citizen. Did you not read the news, like, I think it was a month ago or 2 months ago, where this girl got, like, stopped by Border Patrol and they were interrogating a 9-year-old girl with a fucking U.S. passport card because she, quote unquote didn't look like her picture, and they were asking her like a bunch of like biographical questions. She is nine. Mm-hmm. She doesn't know shit about nothing. All she knows is that this is my ID. I go in and I get out. That's it.
Yeah. So, back to the case. Sorry, guys. So, yeah. a portion of the family didn't even know, of Angelica's existence. Wow. Yeah. So, her sister, Laurencita, said that she only found out about Angelica when she was 11. And Margarita talked about it in terms of Genaro kidnapped her. I don't know where she is. It was always kind of like that. So, pause. She found out about Angelica when her sister, Maribel, that had been kidnapped with Angelica, when she came back to live with Margarita and everyone else. So, it's only when this sister, like, surfaces, like, oh my god, I have a sister. And then she's like, oh my god, I have two sisters, and one of them's missing. But the impression I had was that you don't really talk about it. You know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I understand, like, that could be, like, a coping mechanism. Like, the less you talk about it, the less you have to think and you move on. And it's been, I don't know how many years. You know, at least 10 years, right? Because if Laurencita didn't remember it. Yeah. Right? It's been a while. So, Laurencita, she also didn't know of Baby Hope until 2013. When she saw it on the news and saw all the posters. And then she was like, oh my, this girl looks exactly like me. I wonder if she's my sister. And it was. So, yeah. Can you imagine, like, you see a drawing of a person that looks just like you that was found in a cooler in the woods somewhere?
Yeah, that's, like, terrifying.
Yeah.
It's like, have you seen those articles about people who are completely unrelated but look identical to each other? Yeah. That is like my biggest nightmare. I am terrified of that. Like, my boss has a twin brother, and he is always telling us about like times where he got slapped by girls that he had never seen because of his brother. And I'm like, okay, but what if someone that looks exactly like me is like out there doing shady shit? And then I walk by and they're like, oh, you, brown girl. I'm like, me? Like, no.
Hey, you.
Yeah, no, not me. I didn't do anything. It's scary.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not gonna lie, there's like databases to find people that look exactly like you, and I am on those things. So I'm waiting for the email.
You're gonna find your mom.
Everyone in my family has exactly the same face, my face. So yeah, I have like a army of lookalikes.
Army of Carols.
Yeah.
After the investigators are able to find out that Baby Hope is Angelica, the investigation is focused on the dad, Genaro. Mm-hmm. They interview all the family members that they could find, including Conrado. And it is not until he confesses that the truth comes to light. In 2013, he was a 52-year-old dishwasher for a restaurant in the West Village. His sister, Belvina, had been dead for years. Ooh, I wonder what killed her.
Heart attack. Like cancer or something like that. I think it was a heart attack.
Hope it was painful. Because they say the bad people always stay alive.
Yeah. So, no spoilers.
Yeah. So he was arrested at a restaurant on October 11th, 2013 at around 4. And he had signed a waiver to his right to silence. So did he like plead the fifth? Or
no, he was offered the fifth and he was like, no thanks, I'll talk, and he signed a waiver.
So
it's like when the questions started to get a little too uncomfortable, he was like, all right, plead the fifth, and then they were like, yeah, you're about to sign this waiver, and then he had to talk.
Initially he told police that him and his sister had found Angelica's body on a hallway of the home, and that she had already been dead, and that all that they did was dump the body. Sure, Jan.
Sure, Jan, yes.
However, the lead prosecutor, Melissa
Morges,
got him to confess to the sexual abuse, which he said had occurred days prior.
It's not that bad. It's just bad. It's not horrible. Right? Like, come on.
She countered that with forensics, showing him that how they knew that the rape had happened close to the murder. So, surprise, motherfucker. So, 16 hours after the arrest and 2 hours into the interview, he confessed. He said that he went to Belvina's one night, that he was drunk and ran into Angelica in the hallway, and that's when he attacked her. To be fair, his defense would argue that the confession was coerced, just to put that out there. After the confession, he changed his story. He said that Belvina had called him the day Angelica died, saying that she was playing, running around when she fell down the stairs. He helped her with the disposal of the body, but that was it. There's no evidence of trauma consistent with that kind of fall noted on the autopsy. The official cause of death is and has always been asphyxia. After his interrogation ended, he thanked the prosecutor, saying that he was relieved. When you keep things inside, he said, and then you release them, it makes a big difference. I'm about to release my fist on your fucking face.
Yeah, I mean, I get it that, like, it was a long interrogation and stuff, and they arrested him, you know? So, I mean, the impression was that he wasn't a suspect, but they just arrested him anyways, maybe because he was undocumented. But I get how, in this position, he could have been coerced to confess. But here's the thing. He never, like, said that Angelica wasn't at his place, you know? Like, it would have been easier for him just to be like, yeah, she wasn't staying with me. Like, what do you mean, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I thought she was in Mexico. Like, he could have just made any story up. But no, he said, like, oh, yeah, she was staying with me. Like, and they knew that she was malnourished. So it's like whoever was taking care of her wasn't taking care of her. You know, they already knew that. And then, like, just making up a story, like, yeah, she hit her head or whatever. Like, they didn't have autopsy. Like, there's just no way that, you know, that's true.
Yeah.
So, okay, so here's the thing. He was sent to Rikers Island to await his trial. In 2015, he was transferred to the Rockland County Correctional Facility for safety reasons.
Yeah, because fucking Rikers, it was probably not, that was not the place that you would want to be. I've watched enough TV to know that I would never want to even drive past Rikers Island. I'm sorry.
So, yes. In November 2018, just a few months ago, Conrado dies at the Nyack Hospital. Is that how you say Nyack Hospital? Due to pancreatic cancer and the complications that follow, that kind of thing. He had been waiting for his trial for 5 years. But, I mean, justice never comes.
Well, I hope he died in pain. I hope they didn't give him pills.
Yeah, and probably died chained to a bed, which is, you know, giving that that's how they, you know, tied Angelica up and stuff. You know, he died tied up too, probably. So, that's nice. Yeah, like, that was it. So, one more thing. It's talked about, like, the open ends that this case has. And one of them is Marcia, also known as Maribel. So, Maribel was taken by Angelica's dad to Belvina's, right?
Mm-hmm.
She recalls the night of the crime. You know, some trash bags. She recalls them saying, like, oh, it doesn't fit, you know? So it's kind of implied that she kind of remembers what happened, but she doesn't really. And if she was at around the age of Angelica, it's understandable that she wouldn't really remember much of her sister, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't remember much of my sisters when I was 4 years old, and I grew up with them. You know what I mean? So, I don't know. But here's the thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a big opening for me. Until I found out that she actually came back. Like, she actually went back to live Margarita and Lorencita and whoever and everyone else that probably lived with her. Like, so it's not like she was just unheard of. And yeah, you know, Maribel is in Mexico. So they just, you know, think that Angelica's with her, you know. It would have made more sense if Renato, the dad, would have just dropped Maribel off in Mexico mm-hmm. with him. I mean, brought Maribel to Mexico with him and left Angelica in New York. But, I mean, how does Margarita not ask Maribel what happened to her, Angelica?
Well,
you know, how is she not going to Conrado being like, you know, what happened? Right? Because here's the thing. The sisters, Lorencita, she says that she never met Conrado. He was not like a part. She never heard of him before. Because it wasn't the same dad, you know? So it was like past family, like whatever. Like, she doesn't know those people. Like, how does she not go, like, investigate? Because she says she's been looking for Angelica, right? Which I believe. But it's like, how do you not follow Maribel, you know? If she was old enough to remember trash bags and them trying to fit Angelica in the cooler, you know, she was listening to that. How does she, I don't know, this is, I just can't wrap my
head around it. But how do we know that she recalled that when she was a child? Because speaking from personal experience, I've had like some traumatic experiences when I was a child and I didn't remember them until I was an adult. Because it's sort of like when you go through certain things, it's like your brain tries to protect you and it blocks. But then when it comes back, it's like, boom, like, like in your face, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So how do we know that she knew that as a child?
I mean, I think she probably like testified and said that she remembers it. But even if she didn't remember that, like, you know, if your daughter just shows up and you remember daughters.
Yeah, that totally makes sense.
So it's like, well, it's Maribel in Mexico, it's Angelica in Mexico. Like, you know, she must have been like, well, I don't know, or whatever. But yeah, the thing is, like, the dad, like, the Renato just vanishes. You know, they to this day have not located him, and they don't even know if Renato knows what happened to Angelica. So I don't know. It's just, I don't think it has anything to do with it, you know, but I don't know. It's just weird. Like, how, I don't know, like, the timeline, you know, if let's say she comes back after like 10 years, like as like a teenager or something, even if she doesn't remember it, you know, they have phones, you know, they just call the family. I mean, it's hard to find, but, like, through Facebook or something. Like, I don't know. There's just ways, you know, to find out if Angelica is in Mexico or not.
I feel like there's things that about this case that we don't know as a public.
Definitely, yeah.
I feel like our questions would be answered if we knew all of the details.
If we could just get a police officer on this case.
Exactly.
If only.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. I don't know. It's those open ends that we're never going to know, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, because they have been thoroughly criticized, especially Margarita. I don't think, I mean, they have done probably like one or two interviews with the media by the time they like recognized who Angelica was. And they were not nice interviews, you know. So I totally understand that she is like, you know, not out, not talking about it and stuff. And I sympathize with her, as I said before. But I don't know. It's, I hate these open ends, man. I hate it so much because it's like, ugh. I don't know. I wish I had like a timeline of her family situation.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And like how much she knew about Mexico, because like I think about it, like to this day, like if, I mean, let's say like I vanished or if I just split and go to Brazil, man, we have no idea how to get anywhere. Or, you know, I mean, he knows who to contact. But, like, he doesn't have people's phone number on his phone. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, if he didn't have, like, Facebook and social media, like, how do you find out those things? This is, like, the 90s.
Yeah.
You know? So, and even, like, the early 2000s, in the early 2010s, like, this all developed 2013. By that time, people already had Facebook and stuff. People already had, like, a lot of the things. But we don't know that she had it. Right?
Exactly.
So, yeah. So, it's, I don't know. But still, she has younger daughters. I don't know. I need a timeline. Margarita, I need a timeline. Just for my personal satisfaction. Okay?
I need it on my table by 9 a.m. tomorrow morning.
Like, it's not that I think that she did anything or she's complicit or that she knew but she didn't just talk to the police. You know? I don't think that. I'm just curious about the situation, if that makes any sense. I've been talking for a long time now. You know that scene in, like, The Office that Pam's, like, talking and talking? She's like, I think I'm talking loud. Am I talking really loud? You know?
That's, like, oh, me my right God. Speaking of talking, I need to go back. Let me go on my Facebook, because I'm going to quote the scene from Madagascar that it's literally me. What was the name of the stupid-ass character?
Which one?
It's not a penguin. He's not a Prince penguin. Julian? No, hold on.
Are you talking about the zebra? Are you talking about the
it's
lion?
It's not a zebra.
The giraffe, hippo, the penguins, the many penguins.
No.
Monkeys. No. There's the monkeys that, like, talk like this.
Oh, King Julian.
Yeah, I said King Julian.
Oh, did you?
I did.
So he's literally me. Be quiet, everyone, including me. Shh. Who's making that noise? Oh, it's me again. That's literally me. That is literally me. That used to be my cover picture on Facebook.
Yeah.
Yeah. Be quiet, everyone, including me. Shh. Who's making that noise? Oh, it's me again.
Oh, boy.
Oh, my God. Okay, I need to end this episode.
Okay. Sounds fair. I finally watched the Ted Bundy movie this week.
Was Zac Efron?
Mm-hmm.
I liked it. What are your thoughts?
I liked it.
Really?
I mean, I knew what to keep in mind, you know what I mean? That if I didn't know that they were not trying to glorify, you know what I mean? I would be like, yeah, this is bullshit. But because I kind of knew the purpose of the thing and they kind of wanted Ted Bundy to deceive you too, then I was like, yeah, I get it. You know what I mean? But it's because I don't know too much about the case that I'm like, you know, I know exactly what's happening. I know this is a bad person. So it's like, he doesn't fool me, you know? But I don't know. It wasn't a bad movie. It was fine. Okay.
So.
So. Okay.
My problem with this, I went into this thinking that this was going to be that 2002 Ted Bundy movie, but with Zac Efron. So I went in like, okay, give me blood. I've seen this before. Yeah. I can take it. Even though that movie got me messed up for like a whole month after I watched it the first time. And then I was watching it and I was like, I found myself like slowly putting it as like background noise as I did other things in my bedroom. And I was like, oh, this is bad. Oh. Like, I was not enjoying it. I mean, I enjoyed it because, you know, Zac Efron. But other than that, but I get it because it's based on Liz's biography. So I totally get the purpose of it. But personally, were it not for the eye candy, because Ted Bundy looked like a person who hangs out at 7-Eleven. Ted Bundy was fugly, and I'm sorry if this offends you, but Ted Bundy was not cute. So, like, the eye candy is what kept me watching it, even though I was, like, doing background stuff. But, like, the storyline? Nah. But I was happy to see Haley Joel Osment. I was so happy to see him, because, like, he was one of my crushes when I was little.
I was like, oh, my God, I know this kid. I was like, I know this kid. And I was like, it's not a kid, it's a man. And I was like, you know?
Yeah. Is Haley Joel? Yeah. Did you see AI yet, Carol? We've been having this conversation for months.
I haven't seen AI.
Did you see AI?
No.
I am going to kill you. Did you see Karanjiro yet?
No.
Okay, Carol is officially fired from this podcast. Anyone listening who can speak Portuguese, you are my new co-host. And she's out.
Excuse me, I am the life and blood of the show, okay? So
you're the life? You're about to be the dead of this show if you don't go watch Karanjiro and AI.
Yeah, I'll do some movie time, fucking do watch that
soon. Listen, but do not watch AI when you're on your period, because you're going to cry.
I'll keep that in mind.
It's like Pinocchio, but like with robots.
Pinocchio with robots. You should totally write like a Rotten Tomato review. I'm actually gonna do that right now. AI Rotten Tomato. AI Artificial Intelligence Rotten Tomatoes. It has a whopping 73 tomatometer with 192 reviews. So I'll review it as 4.5 stars because I haven't seen it yet. And I'm saying it is...
like Pinocchio, but with robots.
Pinocchio with robots.
Mm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So if you go to Rotten Tomatoes right now, you're going to see my review. Pinocchio with robots.
And I'm going to reply as like, stop copying my ideas. No, I'm just kidding. I don't think I've ever been on Rotten Tomatoes, to be honest.
Now I am. Yeah, there you go. Oh, yeah, one thing about Ted Bundy. Like, until someone pointed out that he looks just like a porn actor, Ted Bundy himself looks just like James Dean, the porn actor.
And James Dean is a fucking sex offender, too.
Exactly. So, I don't know. I was like... It just looks so much like him, you know? If you look like side by side, it's like horrible. Man.
I used to be acquaintances with this girl back in my fanfic days who wrote a James Dean fanfic before the whole...
Yuck.
No, it was before all of that came out.
Yeah, but there's so many interesting things. Why would you write porn about porn? Right? Just do something else.
Listen... People, listen, Carol. I have written some steamy smut about the Scarecrow from Batman. So leave me alone. Okay.
I'm not judging. I'm fine. I'm judging the porn. But
the porn.
Yeah.
Porn about porn. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway.
Anyways.
Goodbye.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. I was gonna say something. I forgot. Anyways. Goodbye, guys. I hope you guys have a good and no. Again, sorry. Shout outs. Shout outs this week go to Casey, Joycey, Olga, Megan, and Flavio, who interacted with us in any shape, way, form. Was that correct? Was that right? I don't know. Anyways, they liked our stuff, and we repay it by saying their names and saying to let them know that we see you. You know? So yeah, we don't stalk you, but we see you. Okay?
Yes.
So yeah, I hope you guys have a good end of the world and whatever that comes with the apocalypse. I hope you guys have a good time. Okay, ciao.
Ciao.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Suspiria, a true crime podcast. If you are a creep and enjoy listening to all of that horrible information, please check out our previous episodes and write us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts.
And also follow us on social media. We're on Twitter and Instagram as Suspiria Podcast. Facebook is also Suspiria Podcast. If you want to follow Carol, you can follow her at Suspiria Carol. And you can follow me at EU.Steph. Note, none of us post anything interesting.
We do, actually.
If you have any case suggestions, feel free to drop them over at SuspiriaPodcast@gmail.com. Or if you want to be part of this podcast, you can also email us. We promise we won't bite. Ciao!